Coming from the Lower Haight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. All right, folks, it's show number 11 of the Are You Serious show, and I'm just beside myself. There's two of me because we've been doing this so long that I'm starting to multiply, and you're getting tired of the sound of my voice, and you want to hear Diane Bourne's voice. So,
hey, how's it going?
Oh, man, what a sweet voice. We're getting letters about how much people like your voice.
That's fabulous.
They're starting to get a little obscene, though.
Oh, Let's filter some of those.
I filter those out.
Thank you, Are You.
But anyway, we're here. We've got Rob Bresny coming in to talk to us about pronoia. And this should be an interesting show. Last week we had a world-famous philosopher in the studio, Richard Rorty. Man, was he wild. We partied down with him, man. He's kicking it. Oh,
I'm still reeling from reading some of his lectures. Fabulous.
We tried to get him to go home at like 6 in the morning. He was doing shots.
Party animal.
Yeah, it was too cool. But Bresny's mellow. Bresny's a quiet guy, and it'll be hard to squeeze some words out of him, but we'll do the best that we can.
You have your ways.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this. Step right up.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
25-year-old Muslim LeVar Washington. He's a robbery suspect now in custody who had in his apartment jihadist materials and a list of potential terrorist targets around the Los Angeles area. They included California National Guard facilities, Jewish synagogues, and the El Al Israeli airline ticket counter at LAX.
People are being radicalized in our prisons. This is something we have to understand.
Prisoners are considered prime candidates because they are American-born, often angry at society, and have criminal inclinations. Security officials confirm the existence of radical Islamic gangs in the penal system and cite at least one high-profile example, a.k.a. the shoe bomber.
Ah, the shoe bomber.
Now everything footwear.
I was thinking, if the shoe bomber was carrying a bomb up his ass instead, then we'd all have to get...
He'd be the poo bomber?
He'd be the poo bomber, and we'd all have to get searched at the airport.
Oh, goodness.
What would that do
for latex gloves? I mean, that would drive the price of latex right up.
That's true. But this is a serious thing.
No, it is.
I guess that they were talking about the American prison system certainly breeds a lot of anger and resentment. I remember when people talked about radicalization in prison in the 60s and 70s, it meant left wing, basically.
Exactly.
It meant, they were for, some kind of social revolution for,
healthcare,
collectivism or whatever it was, Black Panthers, that kind of thing. George Jackson, trying to escape from jail. And now this is a more of a peculiar thing. There's always been the Muslim presence.
The Nation of Islam, with Malcolm X.
Right.
No, this is true.
And they have the shower areas.
Well, the shower areas in prison.
I meant to say the shadow areas that people ignore in this society, but are, particularly America's prisons.
You could certainly make the case that the prison system has, for decades, been cranking out terrorists, people who are unfit to...
They just
really
terrorize people day to day.
Yeah, they just don't have
small
Islamic
ways.
Label on them.
I remember back when I was a raving left-wing loony. And now, of course, I'm just Mr. Mellow. But there was that popular poem by Ho Chi Minh about in prison, when they open up the prison doors, the dragon will fly out, and a revolution would come from the prison. And this is a different kind of... revolution, or in some ways clearly a reactionary thing, but it nevertheless seems to be representative of
Well, usually you take any disenfranchised person or peoples, they're ripe for the picking. I think that's why this is quite the hunting ground.
It has major corrosive effects on the mind. It actually eats away at the brain. It has a dramatic effect on the physiology of the body. It destroys the teeth in short order. But more than that, like all drugs, it turns the addicted into absolute consumption with the pursuit of that drug. But in this case, much more damaging to the mental capacities and the physiology of the person affected.
As far as I'm concerned, from where I'm living, meth currently is the biggest threat to the United States, maybe even including Al-Qaeda. And I mean that seriously, in terms of the very fabric, the very structure of our nation.
Jim McDonough, director of the Florida Office of Drug Control, talking about how the stimulant crystal methamphetamine chews up the body, on the Bush administration ignoring a drug that now threatens to ravage the entire country. Crystal meth has infested all 50 states and is reaching into every socioeconomic group.
In one recent survey of counties, 58% of cops said methamphetamine was their biggest drug problem, compared with only 19% for cocaine, 17% for pot, 3% for heroin. Unlike other drugs, meth ravages entire communities.
It ravages communities like it's its own, animated beast that walks around and eats entire communities.
Right.
And I think that's fair.
It's a, you know, it's a usual kind of panic, the evil outside, you know, force kind of thing.
Let's but just that, recall
it the is whole. It is a tough drug.
And, it's a tough drug.
On the other hand, I've had crystal meth and I've never had Al-Qaeda.
Tough to compare.
Mainlining Al-Qaeda would definitely hurt you a lot more.
Oh, I think it would be pretty rough on the nerves.
But there are some myths being propagated here. I mean, first of all, just remember the crack baby myth that was spread by the media back in the 80s, which turned out to be completely false. Now there's similar falsehoods being spread by like that Newsweek piece right there. I mean, for instance, that like it rots the teeth. Their claim about that is based on the fact that there are these corrosive chemicals that are used to make it, and that somehow actually corrodes the teeth. But that's not true. Some periodontist came out and said, no, what rots the teeth is bad hygiene. That people they go along with the lifestyle of being hooked on this
and the
drug.
Major sugar craving that tends to go with that it, and the amount of sugar that they eat.
Tooth grinding, maybe a little
that
bit
too.
Tooth grinding.
That too.
But also the giant crash that tends to come after people binge and then they sleep for like 3 or 4 days with their mouths open, and it dries out the gums and it rots the nerves. And
so but I mean, just in terms of speed being a real force in a community, being a real recognizable negative force in a community. I know somebody who lives in a small town in New Mexico. Basically, anytime anybody has gone out and done something like really crazy and really destructive, including, you know, murders or whatever, every case that he's seen has been attributable to people tweaking on speed. So,
yeah, but it just ignores the cause. You know, I mean,
well, the cause is boredom.
Yeah, it's boredom. It's like looking at the world and going,
boredom,
"This isn't worth
access.
It. I need something else." Because I mean, you know, like I've done crystal meth, and I'm somebody who just happens to be pretty moderate with most of my drug intake.
Right.
So I've never had any kind of a problem at all. I know lots of people who are like that. The people who binge and go nuts, they'll find something to binge and go nuts with because life
there's
sucks for them.
Missing,
and,
yeah.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
But nobody talks about that. Instead, they just talk about how to enforce behaviors on people.
Well, I wonder, I mean, how many of the people who are getting into speed these days are doing it for work and to keep up with a fast-paced lifestyle, or are they doing it
all
because
reasons.
they're you know, back there somewhere in the backwoods with nothing to do? And I guess it's both.
To
me, on the rare occasion, so when I had methamphetamine, I mean, which I can't do anymore because of my stomach, but it was to get a lot of reading done or get a lot of writing done. I've never been able to understand people who just want to do like crystal meth sit around and chatter with each other or clean up the corners of their bathroom. All right, we're here with Rob Bresny. Hey, Rob.
Hey, ARU, do you need any commercials? I brought some commercials.
Did you bring us some commercials?
Yeah, I did.
Well, let's start right off with a commercial then.
Okay.
Fuck the introduction. Let's just go
on. ARU Serious Show is brought to you by Yo Mama. Well, actually, it's brought to you by the imaginary lightning bolts that you can fling from your fingers anytime you want to.
Wow. Thanks for the sponsorship, imaginary lightning bolts.
Did you bring any product samples?
Wait a second.
Oh, there's lightning.
I'm not sure if it's working or not. Joe's spark catches on fire, then we'll know. And that's a reference to another fabulous show on this network, Neophiles. And you'll figure it out. You'll puzzle it out by putting them all together. Anyway, Mr. Bresny here is the author of Pronoia is the Antidote to Paranoia, How the Whole World is Conspiring to Shower You with Blessings. His free will astrology column appears in the Village Voice and all over the fucking place. Everywhere you look, there's his astrology column, and it's very much fun. And he's created 5 music albums, 3 of them with the band World Entertainment War, that many of you in the San Francisco Bay Area probably have seen, saw them around in the 90s quite a bit. And you guys probably toured a bit around the country as well, didn't you?
We did, and we reformed in 2000 to do some shows, including New York and L.A.
And he calls himself a perpetrator of sacred uproar, and he's the founder of the Beauty and Truth Laboratory, which is a mouthful because you usually say truth and beauty. So you're already confusing us.
Well,
because we're pretty simple here.
Well,
we're simple folk.
We have to rebel against the prevailing modes of discourse, don't we? In fact, I liked your idea of bringing up fuck right away because that gives me permission to
expand.
Well, we have to redefine the language everywhere we go, just like the gay people redeem the word queer.
Queer, yeah.
Feminists redeem the word bitch. Right. So I'd like to redeem the word asshole, goddammit, and fuck you. Mm. So we just, from here on in, define you asshole to mean my beautiful friend.
Right.
We redefine the word goddammit to mean joy to you. And we redefine the word fuck you.
Well, I don't think fuck you should be exactly what it is, but it should be.
Well, we redefine it to mean, I hope you experience great pleasure.
Thing.
I hope you experience great pleasure. So if you say, you asshole, goddammit, fuck you, you mean, my beautiful friend, joy to you, may you experience great pleasure.
I'm gonna try that today as soon as I go out. I'm going to see how that works. Right out here, I could have tried it in the Tenderloin.
Start slowly.
Old spot, but,
well, I have a question. Someone told me last week that cunt is the word. What's the origin of cunt? And I started looking it up on the internet in some Anglo-Saxon thing, but everywhere it said cunt is the worst word you can say in the English language. Mm. Is that even true?
No, that's only here, though, because that's not true in Britain.
I like that word.
Yeah, they everybody, oh, yeah, yeah.
But they said men told me that women get really upset if you say cunt. I always thought it was
true.
A compliment.
It used to be true.
So could we redefine?
Henry Miller,
please, go right ahead.
Oh, I have. No, you do it. You're
sure
good
job.
At
no, we're all pronoiacs here.
Cunt
is
a beautiful blonde.
I knew you were
going
to leave a bunch of stuff up to us.
Cunt means you're a Marilyn Monroe lookalike.
All right. Well, I'm for it. So I got it. Just to finish the introduction that I so diligently wrote out, I did mention that Eleanor Nathan, who is just a person, nobody famous, but she did say that reading Rob Bresny is like French kissing Jesus. Now, what's that? I tried that once. He eats a lot.
Did you French kiss Jesus?
He eats a lot of garlic, actually.
A lot of hummus, right?
Yeah, you don't want to.
Were there a lot of Jesus Christ around?
You keep the tongue in the mouth, little baby Jesus.
You just chose the wrong Jesus.
Yeah.
There are millions of them out there.
Hey, Seuss, man. He's a cool dude. I tongue kiss him anytime.
Nobody fucks with the Jesus.
So, Rob, have you ever brought a rubber ducky to a crack house?
I've brought some Beanie Babies to a crack house, but
did
not a rubber ducky.
No, you got to get those rubber duckies.
I love
duckies
the little
around
bears. What do you do with them at the crack house? Do they somehow?
I don't know. You suggested it as a possibility.
Well, I saw that show recently, Blind Date with a Crack Whore.
Yeah.
Blind Date with a Crack Whore. It was on
it was
Spike
on Blind
TV.
Date? Oh, was it really?
It was this 20-something stockbroker and his SUV picked up this 40-something crack whore in the ghetto, and they went out together, and he was trying to make nice with her. Well, he was saying, where do you want to go to eat? And she kept saying, I just want to eat you. And then after a while, he took her to this place where you paint pottery.
Right. Oh, you're kidding.
Are you making this up?
No. I saw it on
television.
Yeah. This is a World Entertainment or fantasy. No.
And she's painting the pottery, and he's quoting critics of Matisse and how he's trying to imitate Matisse in his pottery painting. And she said, "This ghost goes crack." she was done with it in 10 seconds. So finally they did. Finally they went and scored some crack.
So they went and this guy smoked a little crack?
It showed him smoking crack on TV.
Can they do that on TV?
Maybe it was simulated.
That's a Frank Zappa-like question. Yeah. Can they say that on TV? Is that allowed?
So now, this is
intriguing. Why are we even bothering doing this show?
There was a cameraman with them.
Yeah, the whole way.
The mainstream media is pretty much gone
as far as
you can go. Well, you say, put down pop nihilism in your book. So where else is there?
Pop nihilism. That's pop nihilism, like yeah.
Well, it's not sufficiently thought out to really be called nihilism, so it's more of a pop kind of
thing. It's more cartoon-y. Just an accident.
Yeah, sure. Right.
An accident. Maybe
an accident of marketing, but that is pure nihilism.
It's marketing. It's total marketing.
Mm-hmm. So we should make all TV pornography, everything, and then all the real shows should be like obscure and sold in little shops. The opposite of what it is now.
I was one of those media critics, maybe that you see guy, but he said, unless it crosses the media threshold, it's not real to anyone, which means unless it's mentioned somewhere in the mainstream media. But I like the stuff that's unreal, that doesn't cross the media threshold.
Right, that you can find in some weird little corner, which is just some human being behaving in an original or an unusual
and often in
way
a,
that you stumble upon. Or
That's I bring back the word mirabilia, M-I-R-A-B-I-L-I-A, which is an old medieval word, and I propose that we reintroduce it to the language. It's small miracles, extraordinary, anomalous events, things that don't make any sense but which are delightful thereby. And there are all those things going on all the time, and they're completely unreported by the media because the media's obsession with nihilism gets them to hone in on just the ugliest aspects of human behavior.
Well, often they have that like one quirky little bit, and they sort of keep it for like a 30-second clip or a moment. When they used to have the mainstream news, that was always the last little bit would be something cute and funny and silly. Because I remember like the part of the Yippie strategy was to get into segment of the news.
Right.
You couldn't get into any other news.
That's right.
So you could get some weird, quirky thing onto the news. You could pull a prank.
Coast to Coast AM has little people calling with things like that.
They do.
They saw fairies. I mean, creatures.
Oh, time. They have a whole night devoted to time travelers who call in and report where they came from and what they're doing here. And
See, why are we doing this show? I mean, why are we even bothering with everything, you know.
No. There are very few shows like this, and like
Coast I know there are no shows like this because
actually what you were just describing YouTube, it sounds a little bit like cryptozoology and what Dave
Latimer
was talking about.
Cryptozoology may be coming up. We may have a show indeed investigating creatures that are thought to perhaps exist or maybe not.
But I have a question now because we interviewed last week a philosopher who has put aside religion now, put aside philosophy.
You probably know him. Richard Rorty. You probably know his philosophy.
Richard
Rorty?
No.
I know
he
quoted from William James, which is one of his
put aside even science as one taking the place of the other. And what he said was he's interested in imagination, but what he said was through language, people are creating themselves all the
beautiful
time. Yeah, and then I was reading a thing about that Saul Bellow said that he couldn't write in the beginning until he found the language, right? That was and that of the people in his books, right? It was all about language. It wasn't about story or character or anything. So that's what you're saying too.
The ancient word abracadabra, which now has come to be dismissed as just a stage magician's trick or word. Actually, its original meaning was "I create as I speak."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's worth the whole day, right?
It was an authentic, magical affirmation. I create as I speak. The language that I use is creating the reality in front of me.
But that idea has come up like 5 times for me in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Is what language?
It's probably trying to tell you something.
Talk, Sherry. So what language?
Arabic.
Is it? Yeah. That's fabulous. I love that.
Let's give Rob a chance. I wanted you to read something. I asked you to pick a few select paragraphs from a great bit right towards the front of your book called Glory in the Highest, which I enjoyed myself.
Thousands of things go right for you every day, beginning the moment you wake up. through some magic you don't fully understand, you're still breathing and your heart is beating, even though you've been unconscious for many hours. The air is a mix of gases that's just right for your body's needs, as it was before you fell asleep. Get this, you can see. Light of many colors floods into your eyes, registered by nerves that took God or evolution or some process millions of years to perfect. The interesting gift of these vivid hues comes to you courtesy of the sun, which continually detonates nuclear explosions in order to convert millions of tons of its own body into light and heat and energy for your personal use. You can walk. You can walk. Your legs work wonderfully well. Somehow your heart circulates your blood all the way down to replenish the energy of the muscles in your feet and calves and thighs. And when the blood is depleted, it finds its way back to your heart to be refreshed. This mysterious blessing recurs over and over again without stopping every hour of your life. You can smell odors. You can hear sounds. You can taste tastes, many of which are quite pleasing to you. You can think. You are in possession of the indescribable mystery of awareness. You can feel feelings and visualize images of things that don't exist. By some improbable series of coincidences or long-term divine plan, language has come into existence. Millions of people have collaborated for many centuries to cultivate a system for communication that you understand well. Speaking and reading give you great joy and a tremendous sense of power. Do you remember when you were born? Probably not, but I assure you that it was a difficult miracle that involved many people who worked very hard to usher you into the world. No less miraculous is the fact that you have continued to grow since that day, with millions of new cells being born within you all the time, without your conscious participation, these new cells replacing old ones that are dying. It's just like magic.
Bravo.
Or intelligent design.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, that's a, is there a designer of all this stuff that seems to work so well?
Well, I don't think Pronoia needs a god, but I personally, having come from shamanic traditions, in the Western mystery tradition, I of course have the great spirit at the center of my life.
You contact other intelligences to
I came up with this theory recently that first of all, I want to say that leftist activists and liberal humanist storytellers are very similar to me temperamentally. I tend to hang out with them. I enjoy them. But what they believe is actually anathema to everything that I perceive, because they are, in Robert Anton Wilson's words, they are fundamentalist materialists. Mm-hmm. They believe that the only reality that exists is what you can perceive with your five senses.
Or with scientific instrumentation.
Or extension of the senses with scientific instruments. That's all that there
Except that scientific instrumentation starts to raise all kinds of interesting questions anyway.
Well, and some scientists are having to deal with the fact now that 96% of the universe is missing in the form of dark energy and dark matter. This is not some new age theory. This is something that's been published in science journals.
Something just fell into dark matter.
Yes, it disappeared.
Somebody's nail clipper just...
But my theory is that these entertainment criminals, who are my friends and colleagues, these people who define our reality because they're the media, they're the liberal elite which run the media, are actually in cahoots with the Christian fundamentalists, because there's actually very...
They offer us only two choices.
Right.
It's like America and the Soviet Union.
That's right. Exactly. But furthermore, the number of Christian fundamentalists who believe in intelligent design are very small, very, very small. But the liberal elite is trying to give them as much play as possible so as to ridicule the whole idea that there is a God or that there's a spiritual presence. And so it's actually in their interest to prop up the Christian fundamentalist.
I'm not so sure about that. I think they're paranoid about them not teaching evolution.
But they're propping
school,
they're promoting intelligent design with all these articles. They're promoting Christian fundamentalism.
Right.
There's a very small percentage of Christians who are fundamentalists who buy that crap.
It might also be meaningful to make a distinction between when you talk about liberals or conservatives, between the people who are broadcasting ideas and people who are receiving them.
Yeah.
In other words, if you talk about the media, I think they do have a slightly more sinister and slightly more cynical maybe agenda. But if you talk about liberals who are receiving those messages, they are more, I think, like you said, more paranoid about, oh my God, look what the right's doing now. It's all going to come to an end because God is
right. They're going to stop teaching evolution. They're going to push us back to the 14th century. Right. And that's what I think. Or sometimes I think that.
Maybe
anyway,
they knew
when
something.
I'm not in a pro-noid
but it's
mood.
Totally absurd that the whole notion that intelligent design has any play in the media whatsoever.
Well, it
gives God a bad name.
Yeah, they're talking about biology and cosmology. I mean, they're two different discussions, really. But they're conflating it into one. But anyway, I have to say, I mean, you're a rank glory to the highest. I believe everything in there except the part where you say in your bathroom the toilet is functioning perfectly. Come on. How many apartments have you lived in?
Well,
about that.
I would say that 90% of the toilets that I experience function pretty well.
Well, I guess 90% of the time, 90% of
the
toilets.
In Africa, they all function well. It's a hole in the ground often,
exactly.
And it functions perfectly.
I've used many holes in the ground in my life, and they were all very graceful. Yeah. But I do want to point out that I corrected your feng shui here in the studio today by putting your toilet seat down, and that might be the cause of your problems.
I'm glad somebody finally said that on the air, because I can't get my roommates to put that lid down.
I'm not just talking about the lid too.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I always put fully close that thing off because
I do it now
because
I'm trained. But generally, I would never think about it.
Well, think about maybe your toilet will start working better.
Our one fear is that our cat is going to dive in there. Yeah, right.
Because cats love to do that, dive into toilets.
I think actually we should take a moment out here and listen to some music. Rob, you brought a CD with you. What was the name of
it? It's World Entertainment War, my band.
Do you have a track that you wanted to introduce?
Apathy and Ignorance is always a good one.
Okay. What's up with that track? Why do you like it?
It's like a kirtan kind of thing that everyone can sing along with.
Okay. Well, here
so
we
usually,
go.
Usually what happens is Jeff just picks out what he likes or what he doesn't like the least, or what he doesn't, that he dislikes the least. Am I?
Something like that.
He's trying to French kiss the microphone.
I'm imagining myself. Anyway, play music and then we'll come back.
Yeah, okay, here goes Apathy and Ignorance.
Are you serious? In the land where nothing's sacred, where the doctors make people sick, if you stand on your head, you might see things more clearly. But then again, you might become addicted to conflict. I have a problem. I know that lawyers cause all the crime. And the banks
Are you serious? We're back after listening to Great Noise from World Entertainment War. And Rob, for those in the audience who don't know squat about pronoia, why don't you describe something about the history of the concept and then how you came to mutate it into your own particular...
John Perry Barlow originated the word, although he actually told me that an editor of his originated the word in 1976.
Wait a second. John is always claiming to originate. Well, never.
But he actually agreed that his editor had coined the word.
All right.
Although it does have a Greek origin. Pronoia was the name of Prometheus's consort.
You know, there was actually a word going around also, metanoia, which was very similar.
I don't know about that.
But, I mean, it's basically the idea that you take a bigger view and it generally comes out to be somewhat more positive than the paranoid connections that you make when you're looking at a narrower spectrum.
Right.
But go on.
He coined the word. He made a one-sentence definition.
Right.
The universe is helping us out. And Fraser Clark and the Zippies, I think, were the second main influence in Fraser.
I remember Bob Wilson used it a bit.
I didn't know that he actually used the word. He certainly has all the pronoia concepts, though.
Right.
He said, imagine that you and your friends basically run the world. And with that as your platform, you will achieve a pronoic point of view.
Or you'll slap your friends around.
He's not a friend of ours.
I noticed that Fraser's gone off to the dark side though recently.
Fraser's gotten weird.
Yeah,
I don't read his.
It's
his
scary,
stuff, but it seems to be sort of I don't know, pro Taliban or what. It's strange. Let's just put it that way.
It's scary to me.
Fraser Clark, who
actually took Pronoia and ran with it with the Zippy tour in England in 1994 and in the United States in 1995, they were working with that concept to some degree.
Well, the Pronoia tour didn't do that well, so that can hurt your Pronoia.
Well, I guess my point, and I talk about it in the book, is that I was shocked realizing that no one had run with it. It's a perfect New Age meme. It's you would think.
So what are you doing with it? What's the Rob Bresny Pronoid?
Unfortunately, if I thought more like a New Age guru, I'd probably package it more benignly and leave out the mention of the underworld and darkness and that stuff. But that wouldn't be honest for me, because this the kind of pronoia that I talk about, which is guarantees that you always get exactly what you need, and you always get exactly what you need exactly when you need it. But not necessarily your ego. Your ego might not necessarily get.
Don't necessarily get what you want.
So that's a little bit of a different take on the notion that the universe is conspiring in your behalf, because it is always bringing you exactly the teaching that you need, the ordeal that you need in order to flush some shadow aspect of your own character, or perhaps just pure blessings as we normally think about them.
Kind of a Zen thing. Almost.
Yeah.
Learning process. But I mean, just to be a dour realist, everybody knows that Are You Serious is such a dour realist.
Are you serious?
I am, unfortunately. All right, so the universe conspires to give you what you need, even if it's not necessarily good stuff. But through human history, there's been a lot of disease and grief and pain visited upon all kinds of people. I mean, at the same time as I'm reading your book, I'm reading a book about Stalin. So, just because I'm weird and it happened to be in the airport when I was going by. And it was the only interesting thing there. So how do we conflate all this dark stuff? I mean, pain is...
Well, the argument that pronoia is disproved by pain and death is specious in my view, because... Right. It's not a big enough view of the reality of human existence, because, for instance, I think that we're born many times, that any pain that we experience this time is somehow related to experiences we've had in previous or future incarnations.
Yeah, so this is based then on a belief on reincarnation.
If
you didn't believe in reincarnation, would you still be able to take a pronoid view?
Well, I think. I'd make a distinction between stupid, repetitive pain in which you're just acting out your oldest conditioning because you're addicted to that, the comfort of your oldest conditioning, as opposed to smart, useful pain, which comes to you because you're taking risks and you're acting out of love and adventure. And to me, if you are a paranoid person, you're going to experience that smart, useful pain in your life, right? Because it's trying to make you smarter. I mean, in Kabbalah and the Tarot, the Devil card is that archetype of the Riddler, of the one who presents us with insolvable problems so that we can get smarter by rising to the occasion. So yes, pain is, in from one point of view, the devil's way of demanding that we get smarter, more loving, more expansive.
Right. Do you get into paranoid moods still?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. It takes a lot of retraining because...
What puts you into a paranoid mood? You had a great story about a run-in with a woman driver. That was a... you almost slipped into a paranoid mood.
Yes, I did.
Why don't you tell that? Because that was a wonderful story. If you could give a brief recounting of that story.
I was driving on one of the main highways in Marin County, and a woman in a convertible car basically cut right in front of me as she's talking on her cell phone. And I gave some little honk, and she was very annoyed by that. And she fell back and made her car parallel to mine, and was just giving me this Tibetan
demonic.
Didn't
she flip you the bird as well?
Yeah, yeah. And she, you know, every angry vibe that she could possibly summon. And adrenaline was flowing in me, and I was having, of course, an instinctual reaction to what she was doing. And I thought she was going to actually run into my car. You know, she was sideswiping me, basically. And I had come back from Burning Man only 2 or 3 weeks before. Right. And there was an experience that I had then that allowed me, and I remembered that in that moment, and it allowed me to change my emotion in the moment, which I had never done before. I actually took that anger, which was in full-blown, full-bore mode, and flushed it. And because for instance, the anger that rises in me is always bad for my health, and it's contrary to my paranoid impulses. But in any case, I decided to not only feel this, but actually act it out. And I decided I was going to give her a gift, a very valuable gift of a talysman that someone had made for
your own feces.
It was kind of hard to poop in
a monkey gift.
but I had always carried with me in the car this talisman that a friend had made, and it was composed of actual $100 bills folded in an origami fashion. And it's actually, so just literally, it was $800 worth of U.S. tender in there. And I actually threw it into her car as we were driving along.
That's just nuts.
But it was
cool, though.
It was also a ritual consecration of the kind of approach to life that I wanted.
Yeah, we have to mention that Rob Bresnahan is not, you know, a rich rock star, but a probably a poor rock star.
Middle ground
rock star. So, but when you talk about flushing the emotion, I mean, how do you know that you're flushing it as opposed to, say, repressing it, and it's just not just going to pop up in some unhealthy way later on?
Well, and I don't think that anger is inherently anti-pronoic. I think anger is a great cause for seeking justice and seeing things clearly. It can be anyway. But in this particular case, and in many cases where I experience anger, it's just a reflex. Mm-hmm. It's just instinct. The fright and flight mechanism, mm-hmm. fight or flight mechanism. And I don't really want that to dominate my life.
Right. It's not going to really have done you any good to thresh it out with this lady by the side.
No. Whereas anger, sometimes if I'm having a problem in a relationship with somebody and I begin to feel anger, that anger might lead me to a greater clarity about why I feel that way.
Or anger about social injustice.
That's right. Exactly. And it might motivate me to be a better activist.
Well, we've had a great time here with Rob Bresny, and it does seem too short, but fear not, because he will be back with us. To us, it will seem like a mere few minutes, and to you, it may seem like as much as a month or so. But we will be talking more with Rob Bresny about Pronoia is the Antidote for Paranoia, his new book, and other Rob Bresny-like things.
Many thanks to Rob Bresny for joining us in the studio today. Our gang of four today was Are You Serious, Diana Brown, Sherry Miller, and me, Jeff Deal. Next week, Ben Blue from the magazine Anarchy, a journal of desire armed, returns to the show. The Are You Serious show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Go to mondoglobo.net to check out all of our fine shows, including Neophiles, Pastor Jack, and the brand spankin' new Junket 415. Subscribe to the entire network feed at mondoglobo.net. This has been the Are You Serious show. Don't be afraid of the dark.